I'm going to try and make your life a little bit more complicated by talking today not about South Africa proper, but about Southern Africa. And I'd like right off the bat to make a distinction. When we say South Africa, we are referring to just this one country, the one labeled here, Cape Natal and so forth. That's supposed to be one country. When we say Southern Africa, we are referring to the whole subcontinent, such countries as Angola, Botswana, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, Swaziland, sometimes Tanzania, as well as South Africa, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. All of those countries comprise what is known as Southern Africa. And I would like to focus mostly on Angola, Namibia, and South Africa, because these are the countries where the foreign policy of this country is beginning to go in the wrong direction again. I am a very informal person, so anywhere along the line, if you feel like I'm going too fast, or you don't quite understand something, feel free to stop me. I will not scream, holler, or anything like that. Angola is a country that for almost 500 years was under Portuguese colonial domination. For almost 20 years, the Angolan people fought a war of liberation, and they finally managed to throw out the Portuguese in November of 1975. When they did this, unfortunately, there were three liberation movements, one known as the MPLA, for popular movement for the liberation of Angola. The other one was called UNITA, Union for the Total Independence of Angola. The third one was known as FNLA, National Front for the Liberation of Angola. If these letters are out of place, that's because they speak Portuguese in Angola. So that, like, popular liberation for the movement of Angola is Movimento Popular Liberation do Angola. Anybody who speaks Portuguese can feel free to correct me. Unfortunately, as I said, when the Portuguese were defeated in 1975, these three movements had the opportunity to get together and form a national government. But because there were so many people on the outside pulling in so many different directions, these three movements ended up fighting a civil war, pitting the MPLA, which was supported by the Russians and the Cubans, against UNITA and FNLA, which were supported by the United States and other Western countries. And this was where the problem began to arise, because your CIA, which for some of us who may not be quite familiar with the initials, stands for the Central Intelligence Agency, decided that they wanted to stop the Russians in Africa. Therefore, they took it upon themselves to arm and encourage UNITA and FNLA. And in so doing, they gave them not just arms, but also money, your taxpayers' money, which I'm told they did without your consent. Arms, money, as well as mercenaries were sent there to try and fight and prevent the MPLA from coming to power. Because the thinking among some of your CIA higher officials was that if the MPLA government came to power, that would mean that Angola would become a communist country, would become a Russian satellite. And to the CIA, this was a no-no. Well, to make a long story short, to make a short story complicated, the South Africans decided that they did not want to see the MPLA government come to power also. So in their usual high-handed fashion, the South Africans invaded Angola. So here you have South Africa, the United States with the CIA, West German mercenaries, English mercenaries, Portuguese mercenaries, and several other mercenaries from Western nations fighting on one side, the side of UNITA and FNLA. Then you had the Russians and the Cubans aiding the MPLA. Well, the South Africans and all those mercenaries, the CIA included, were defeated in this war, and the MPLA government came to power. And that, to all intents and purposes, should have been the end of the story. Your last administration, led by President Carter, made some efforts to sort of come to some understanding with the MPLA government. But I'm sure by now we're all still reeling from all these budget cuts and all these other things emanating from the election of your last government. Well, the election of this new administration has sort of begun to stand logic on its head and has begun to sort of reverse almost all the advances that were made by the Carter administration. Once again, instead of looking at Angola, instead of looking at Namibia, instead of looking at the whole of Southern Africa as an African problem, your new administration, led by Ronald Reagan, has begun to look at South Africa, rather at Southern Africa, as a communist problem. Reagan said it before he came to power, when he was campaigning, that the Southern African problem was a Russian weapon aimed at us. I'll repeat that. The Southern African problem is a Russian weapon aimed at us, meaning the United States. This, in our estimation, is not only naive, myopic, but also very simplistic, because the Africans in Southern Africa particularly consider it an insult of the highest, or is it the lowest order, to look at us as simply a battleground for the fight against communism and capitalism. We find it very insulting that we are going to be used again as a political football. We feel that in Angola, like I said, there was a war that lasted more than 15 years, and so many Angolans were killed. In Namibia today, there is a war that has been going on for the better part of the last 20 years. South Africa, my comrade again, outlined the problems, and you and I are well aware of the fact that as time goes on, casualties will mount again. Zimbabwe is another story. We've just concluded another 15-year war in which we lost 27,500 of our people and 275,000 were injured. And almost 1 million people were uprooted. Right now, as Zimbabwe reorganizes, we're in the process of trying to get all of these people back together to form a nation again. And therefore, we view it with the greatest trepidation when we find that the war is not actually quite over for us, simply because the superpowers have taken it upon themselves that since they are not yet at the point where they can fight it out one-on-one, they are again going to use us, the Africans, as their guinea pigs. They're going to use Southern Africa as the battleground where they will fight out their war. Again, we notice that for this reason, we may be losing a lot more of our people. Our major concern in Southern Africa right now is to rebuild our shattered economies, our divided nations, and concentrate on the more mundane things like trying to build an economy, provide jobs, education, health facilities to all of these people. But we're again being denied this opportunity. And I speak with you today, I could be using much, much stronger language, but this is Holden Village, and we tend to be nice here. But the casualty figures that I just mentioned to you are only the official figures, and you all know that in every war, the official figure is always much lower than the actual figure. I have not quoted for you the figures from Angola, nor have I quoted the figures from Namibia, nor have I quoted the figures from South Africa. That is why I feel very, very strongly about the turn that your administration is taking, that we would like you as voters, you as Americans, to be able to communicate to your government that Southern Africa is not a political football. Southern Africa is populated by people like you and I, whose objectives, goals, ambitions, and aspirations are just like yours. And if this country is going to fight communism, which we do not disagree with, maybe they need to fight communism, but we draw the line on how this war is carried out. We don't want it to be carried out on our backs. We would like to start removing the landmines that were planted during all of these wars that took place all over Southern Africa. And our Prime Minister in Zimbabwe, for example, put it in biblical terms when he said that it's time for us to turn our swords into plowshares. Turn our swords into plowshares. That's a tongue twister for a non-English speaking person. And so we are very much disappointed. Now, to further illustrate what we mean by this disappointment is, we look at recently, if you have been following the papers, you might have heard that this government, for the first time in a long, long time, hosted the foreign minister from South Africa. This was a slap in the face of not just us in Southern Africa, but to all Africans and to all normal people throughout the world. Because as you heard this morning, South Africa is not a normal society. It is the duty of each and every one of us to try and make South Africa into a normal society. And yet, your current administration has been talking about we need to bring South Africa into the fold so that we can use them as an ally to fight communism. In other words, as far as your administration is concerned, it is too bad if Africans have to be sacrificed. What counts the most is to fight this real or imagined communist menace. It is also, like I have said, highly insulting. Because when you look at all of Africa, I might digress a little bit and mention to you that there are some 51 countries on the continent of Africa. And to imply that any one of those countries is a communist state, or to imply, okay, let me backtrack a little bit. The thinking among Reagan's people, which we take as being a throwback to the 1940s, to the 1940s logic, seems to be that if the Africans cooperate with the Russians, then that means it is a loss for the Americans. That is very simplistic. Because if you look at all of Africa, there is a tendency throughout Africa, Southern Africa in particular, to follow what we call a non-aligned path, meaning that we realize there are two superpowers, the Russians and the Americans. One is supposed to be capitalist, the other one is supposed to be communist. We take them as being extraneous to us, in other words, as being outside of Southern Africa. We will cooperate with either one of them as long as it is in the best interests of Southern Africa. Just as in this country, you will trade with Iran, you will trade with Venezuela, you will trade with Nigeria, just as long as it is in your interest. Right now, I think this country is beginning to cooperate more and more with China, which up until recently was a no-no. But you are trading with China right now because it is in the interest of this country. We would like to have that same independence because Southern African nations, with the exclusion of South Africa and Namibia, are all independent sovereign states. They should be the ones to decide who they want their friends to be. And they have decided that they would like to be friends with both East and West. When we were fighting our war in Zimbabwe, we went to the Russians for the weapons and the Chinese for the weapons and other Eastern Bloc nations because Western countries refused to supply us with the weapons. However, Western nations were also instrumental in our were also useful in our war in the sense that they ostracized the Ian Smith regime, which was in Rhodesia at the time, and by denying it markets, economic sustenance, they were able to bring Rhodesia down to its knees. That is the combined effort, the economic embargo that was placed on Rhodesia, plus the war of liberation that we were fighting, together combined to sort of bring Rhodesia down to its knees, until today we have a country called Zimbabwe, which even our worst enemies, our worst critics, agree has been a much better experiment and a much better exercise than they had ever thought it would be. So in essence, what I'm saying is that Southern Africa should be viewed as Southern Africa. Another argument that your government right now makes seems to be that we need South Africa as a strategic ally in the fight against communism, one, and also we need South Africa because of the minerals that come from South Africa. Well, to use a polite term, again, in deference to Holden, that is pure baloney. Because as far as minerals are concerned, the countries of Southern Africa that I've mentioned, the independent ones of Zimbabwe, Zambia, Zaire, and Botswana, to a greater extent, as well as to a smaller extent, Angola and Mozambique, can provide you with almost all of the minerals that you get from South Africa. In other words, you don't need South Africa as much as your president tells you you do. In terms of a market for your finished products, you also don't need South Africa that badly, because in terms of figures alone, South Africa has a population that is roughly 26 to 28 million. Southern Africa, on the other hand, has a population closer to 60 million. So if you're talking in terms of a trading partnership, you're much better off going with Southern Africa. I might quickly run now to mention one very important aspect of Southern Africa, and that is that shortly after the independence of Zimbabwe, the Southern African nations of, Botswana, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, Swaziland, Tanzania, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Zaire, the nine nations of Southern Africa, got together to form what they called an economic community of Southern African states. Because one of the things that Western nations had for a long, long time tried to do was to tie the economies of all these countries to South Africa's economy. South Africa's economy was most highly developed by virtue of the technology and the economic impact of the Western nations that invest in South Africa. And so we found that South Africa's economy was the most highly advanced, while the economies of all these other independent African majority ruled nations were dependent on South Africa. All these nations then got together and decided that it's about time that they develop their economies so that they can reduce dependence on South Africa. So they formed this economic community of Southern African states, somewhat along the lines of the European Economic Community, where they'll begin to trade more among themselves than they do with the outside world. And then that way, they can develop together as a region rather than a separate nation, so that when Zimbabwe wants to build a railway line, if that rail line costs, say, $10 million, and Zimbabwe cannot afford to build that rail on its own, what Zimbabwe will do is to go to a common fund of all these nine nations, get that $10 million, build the rail line, and then extend it into these other neighboring countries. That way, not only will Zimbabwe's rail lines be improved, but it will also begin to help and aid the transportation system of the neighboring countries. And by the same token, if we need ports for our exports, all of these countries are going to contribute to build the ports in Mozambique and in Angola. That way we'll have an outlet to the sea that will go through an independent majority-ruled African nation instead of going through South Africa. And the ultimate goal of all of this, in addition to just strengthening the economies of independent Africa, is also to make sure that we'll get to a point very soon where we'll give this country and Western Europe and every other country in the world that does not wish to deal with us on an equal footing, we'll give them the ultimatum that you have an opportunity. You can trade with South Africa or with independent Africa, but not both. In other words, you can't have your cake and eat it too. We have always resisted this confrontation politics, as we call it, because for a long, long time we have tried very hard to make the Western nations understand our problems. This country particularly, we have been preaching with this country for as long as I can recall, letting them understand that we have no real quarrel with South Africa. Except for the hostages, our hostages, those 25 million of our people that South Africa holds hostage, that is our quarrel with South Africa. When those people are free, we'll be the first to jump to South Africa and say, welcome back to the world of sanity. When South Africa stops attacking an independent and sovereign state like Angola, then we'll also be able to jump in and say, welcome back to the world of realism. And that is why, for this reason, we say that the United States is on the wrong side again. It's backing another loser, because we feel that we would rather negotiate, talk, and come to an understanding. We've always tried to do that for as long as I can recall, but almost every time was spent. And so that is why we are very much disappointed with your current administration. And I feel glad in talking to people like you today, not just because I'm talking at Holden, but because I know that I'm talking to people who are coming from throughout the country. And you are the voters. You are the people that make the decisions. While I'm disappointed with Reagan, I know that he didn't just wake up one morning in the White House. Somebody put him there. And I'm hoping that next time that when election time comes around, these are some of the questions that you will ask of the candidates about how they view the outside world, that you let them know that while we must fight communism, we must not sacrifice other people. What the Southern Africans are concerned with is return to peace, return to nation building, return to all of those things that we value the most, like becoming self-sufficient nations, as this country has been attempting to do. I could go on and on. As you can see, I'm quite fired up because Reagan is one of my least favorite people. But I think I should, at this point, give you the opportunity to, shall I say, skin me alive. So any questions, comments, queries, complaints?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like you to... Okay, well, first I'll say what bothers me, and then I'll ask you to clarify. It bothered me very much when this country pretended that the People's Republic of China did not exist. We also do this with Cuba. We have no relationship with this country. I think this is absurd. It seems to me that you are, I hear you saying that you think basically we should isolate South Africa and not have relationships with the Afrikaner government of South Africa, which seems to me to be saying that that doesn't exist. And I don't see the benefit from not having being related to that, as I don't see any benefit for us not having a relationship with Cuba, nor when we, I mean, it just seems to me to be absurd.
Okay, well, maybe I need to clarify that a little bit here. What I said was not so much isolate South Africa. What I said was follow the policy that was adopted by the last administration. The current administration did not so much isolate South Africa as try and push it towards meaningful change in South Africa. This government is coming with an entirely different approach, which is that we need South Africa. The last government was saying we don't really need South Africa. We need South Africa to change. When South Africa changes, we'll be able to welcome her into the international community. In other words, the last administration had the advantage of pushing South Africa towards some dialogue with the Africans. That was the basic principle behind that. Now, as long as you can accept South Africa and say, we need you, you give them that encouragement to go ahead and pursue this policy of racism, which, as you see, is very detrimental to like 70% of the population. And remember, South Africa's racism does not simply affect the people of South Africa. It affects almost all of Africa. It is a blot on our humanity when you have a country that is almost founded on the same principles as Hitler, functioning and actually benefiting from your technology and from your cooperation and support and sympathy.
So you would say to more continue the situation as it was under Carter, continue. I mean, you do not think the United States, for example, should break diplomatic relations with the, you know, with the government there. I'm aware of the moves of the new administration as to providing weapons and those things. And that is what you are focusing on.
That is correct.
Rather than, you know, going.
That's what I was focusing on, yes, particularly the military aspect and also the economic aspect. In other words, I would like to see this administration applying pressure on South Africa to change. For example, you notice that South Africa still occupies Namibia. And under the last administration, there was a lot of pressure to get South Africa to withdraw from Namibia. Under this present administration, you'll notice that, okay, there was a time when South Africa was moving towards accepting internationally supervised elections in Namibia. But as soon as they realized that elections were coming up in this country, they waited because they had heard what Reagan was saying, which was that South Africa is actually a friend of ours. In other words, right now, South Africa can go ahead and stall as long as possible because they know that there is no way this country can ever impose sanctions against South Africa. Whereas under the last administration, there was fear that if we don't move, there's a possibility that America would use her influence and also influence their allies to take some punitive measures until South Africa moves towards some substantive change in South Africa. So I'm looking at it on a very, very broad range.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to. I have an idea. I don't think we should have anything to do with Cuba. If I knew a bully that was going to beat me up, I wouldn't ask him over for dinner. And I think one of the things which Reagan has done is that we're going to carry on our political help of Taiwan. And at the same time, I think we're trying to pull two strings. But there's been a move, there's criticism of big companies going into South Africa. Now, ITT spent $200,000 putting up a school for these people down there to help educate them. Each year, they donate $150,000 toward this school to keep it going.
And international harvesters, every time the stockholders meet, and there's a number of other companies that oppose having anything to do with South Africa, they should take their companies out of there. And do you feel that they should?
Okay, you've touched on two points. I think I'll begin with first point you made, which is that IT&T built a school for the black children, and International Harvester also contributed some money towards the improvement of the lives of the Africans. Is that correct?
Right, yeah.
Okay. Well, we are aware of these small gestures, these small tokens, but at the same time, you have to understand that it's like what was happening during slavery time, which was that there were a number of people who disagreed with slaves escaping to the north for the simple reason that they said if you're on the plantation, at least you had some food. If you escaped to the north, you were likely to starve to death. I don't know where you stand on that kind of logic. In essence, what these international companies are saying, it's okay for them to go on and continue to support the current administration, the current government in South Africa, because they are providing jobs and they are providing these little things. But you see, we're looking at the alternative, which is that we would like to see a complete change. And as long as these companies are there providing the money to South Africa, that same money is what is being used to buy the weapons to kill the children when they go out in the streets protesting. That's what we object to. What I was advocating, in essence, was that if Western companies would have the same guts to take the approach that they did in Zimbabwe or Rhodesia, as it was. Because, like I said, in Rhodesia, when Western companies withdrew their economic support, that forced the government in Rhodesia to go and negotiate, because the government then was bankrupt. If and when these companies were to make a similar move in South Africa, that coupled with all of the other pressures that my friend Itulele was talking about this morning, there's a very good possibility that they would South Africa would realize she does not have the friends that she thinks she has. And since South Africa cannot exist in isolation, it would be forced, the people would force South Africa to get to the negotiating table and build a society where everyone can participate. And that is my view.
Is Rhodesia better off under their new government than they were under Ian Smith?
Does someone like to answer that question?
Yeah.
Zimbabwe is better off.
But my feeling has been this, and we know it, communism is out to destroy it.
That's the point I made at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Communism may be out to destroy you, but why should you fight your battle on my back? I don't disagree with your fighting against communism, but at the same time, I don't want you coming to kill my children because you're fighting communism.
Wholeheartedly, but I didn't see that we ever sent any troops or anything in there. Maybe we did send money. I have no proof of that.
Okay, there have been several books written about the CIA and how it sent money to Angola in 1975. Also, there is, you might have been reading lately about an amendment called the Clark Amendment, which Reagan was trying to repeal. That amendment was passed in 1976. Specifically to stop the CIA or any other branch of the US government from sending money without congressional approval. In other words, right now, the CIA cannot legally send money to fight any war in any part of the world where the United States, with which the United States is not formally at war. But Reagan would like to repeal this law so that it will be easy for the CIA to just go ahead and carry on a war, even though the United States is not formally at war with that country.
You say Reagan repealed this law?
No, he has been trying to repeal it. He has been trying to repeal this law. So far, he has not succeeded, but he would like to. And we see that as a very dangerous precedent, because the one country that would be most directly affected is Angola, because he has pointed out Angola and said, this is where we must stop the Russians. And we're saying that you cannot stop the Russians in Angola, because Angola is an independent African nation. And while the Russians may be there, the Americans are there also. The Americans are in Zimbabwe. But you don't hear anyone saying that we should get the Americans out of Angola, the Americans out of Zimbabwe, because then Zimbabwe is in the American camp. In other words, the point I'm trying to make is that the Angolan government should be given the opportunity to be friends with whoever she chooses to be. If they want to be friends with the Russians, that is their prerogative. If they want to be friends with the Americans, that is their prerogative. We don't see it being an issue having both Americans and Russians in Angola. You may see it that way, we don't.
Angola being friends with the Russians has nothing to do with the Russian stakeholder or, you know, communist stakeholder in Angola.
put it much better than I could. Because we have to remember, like I said, that Angola fought a 20-year war of independence. It would be very silly and almost unthinkable for the Angolan people, having fought that long and that hard and having lost that many people, to just have to throw out the Portuguese and accept the Russians. The Angolans would like nothing better than, I mean, nothing less than to be an independent nation that is totally and completely independent of anyone and everyone.
Can I just add something there, Congress? When the Reagan administration, by way of Secretary of State Haig, asked Congress to repeal the Clark Amendment, Gulf Oil Corporation came to Washington and lobbied against the administration's efforts, because Gulf Oil Company had been working out the terms with the Angolan government for Gulf Oil's interest.
Not just Gulf.
Yes, Gulf is just one example.
Very
opposed
to that.
Yeah, well, no, but it was kind of interesting.
Right, that is an illustration.
They were saying, let Angola decide these things.
Yeah, that is an illustration of, like I have said, the fact that we have both Russians and Americans in Angola. Here you have Gulf, an American company, and you have Russian technicians helping in the medical field. Because Angola feels that she needs Gulf in there prospecting for oil, yeah, as well as she needs the Russians there helping, you know, integrate their health facilities.
Two questions. Mm-hmm. With the Cubans in Angola, what is the Angolan people's current feeling about their continued presence? Is it either, you know, to what extent is there a continued presence that we hear about? And what are the Cubans about, you know, with the country wishing to be independent, to go their own way about the involvement of the Cubans in their economy and in their country? And secondly, how, when you talk about this economic block of southern countries, how is that affected by this sort of inner struggle when, for instance, like in Zaire, they were upset because Mozambique was harboring guerrillas who were against the government in Zaire and were fighting borders going back and forth? How are they attempting to solve those kinds of problems to achieve this economic continuity?
Okay, to answer the first question, what is the Angolan's view of the Cubans, and if there are any Cubans in Angola? Yes, there are some Cubans in Angola. Their view is that when Angola was being attacked by South Africa, Angola appealed to any and every country that would come and help them fight this invader. Because anytime you have someone invade your country, you fight them with whatever you have. The only people that came to their aid at the time were the Cubans. So the Cubans were viewed as the friends of the Angolan people. And then the Angolan government went further on to say that, okay, I need to backtrack a little bit. Since 1976, when South Africa invaded Angola, South Africa has repeatedly attacked Angola. Almost every week you hear of South African troops, South African planes going and bombing refugee camps in Angola, bombing economic targets in Angola.
And the Cubans there before 76?
The Cubans came in 1976 when the South Africans invaded. Before 1976, they were not there. It was just a war between the Cubans, between the Portuguese and the Africans. Okay, so Angola says, if and when South Africa stops attacking Angola, then they can send the Cubans home. They will, yes. They will. Because by the same token, there were a number of Russian technicians in Mozambique just before Mozambique's independence. And when Mozambique gained independence, those technicians were sent home. And there were no problems at all in sending them home. It's not, it's unfortunate that you read most, just the Wall Street Journal and NBC and all these other biased media, because they'll give you the impression that because they're anti-Cuban, they'll give you the impression that the Cubans are an occupationary force. They are not. And if you want the documentation of South Africa's attack on Angola, you should read magazines like the one that the Tulele showed you this morning, Africa Now. And there was, for example, a 1978 massacre called the Chimoio massacre, when South African troops went in and bombed the refugee camp, killing some 800 women and children. But again, you don't hear much about that, because your media here focuses only when it's white civilians that get killed or white soldiers that get killed, unfortunately. So the Cubans are viewed as friends of the Angolan people. If and when South Africa gets to be free, which we hope will be soon, or if and when South Africa stops attacking Angola, the Cubans will go home, as directed by the Angolan government. The second question was
the economic continuity, the security of countries when there are border problems, for instance the one between Zaire and Mozambique, when Mozambique was harboring a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago.
Okay, I was trying to think. To my knowledge, Zaire does not border on Mozambique at all. I did hear that there were some Zairean dissidents that were being harbored in Zambia, not Mozambique. It was Zambia that I heard of.
Okay.
Yeah. That was resolved because all of those nine heads of state, the presidents of the nine countries that I've mentioned, met first of all in Maputo, Mozambique. Then again they met in Harare, Zimbabwe. Then again they met in Lusaka. They were trying to iron out all these various ideological differences, these political differences, what have you. And the document that they came up with at each one of those three meetings indicated that there were no more problems. There may be ideological differences, like I said, but they're looking at it in a much more holistic context, in the sense that they're looking at, they need each other, and so they will cooperate, even though they may not agree on every minor detail. And the latest that I've heard is that after their last meeting, when they managed to get about $750 million to get this economic entity off the ground, so that there were no problems whatsoever. And then, as a matter of fact, the last report I read was that they had opened a research station in Botswana to research cures for foot and mouth disease, which is a disease that has been afflicting cattle and other livestock all over Southern Africa. And the results that they came up with were given to all the other countries. And so, foot and mouth disease is being combated on a regional scale instead of on an individual scale, as was the case before. No more questions?
I'll ask you another question. Do you think the Cubans will go home? Why
yes.
Did the Russians go back to Russia from Cuba? And also to take their missiles that are aimed at every principal city in the United States.
What about explaining the arrangements of Zimbabwe, since it came through this protracted war and asked for assistance from many sides with the Russians now? I think that's a helpful case. The arrangements that Prime Minister Mugabe
during the War of Independence in Zimbabwe, like I said, we could not get any help from military help from Western countries. The countries that provided us with weapons to fight the war were Russia, China, and Eastern Bloc nations like Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia and East Germany. And they provided the weapons and most of the training to a large extent. Zimbabwe gained its independence in 1980, April of 1980. And one of the first things that it did was to send all of these people packing, send them back home, told them that, thank you very much, we appreciate what you did for us, but we're now trying to demilitarize Zimbabwe. We're now trying to concentrate on building a country. We don't need weapons anymore. The Russians went home. Most of their weapons, some of their weapons are still in Zambia, but they are being gradually shipped home. The Chinese, who were based mostly in Mozambique, Chinese technicians, that is, a few hundred of them were based in Mozambique. They too packed and went back home. And so, in Zimbabwe today, there are no foreign troops that I know of. And as far as Mozambique is concerned, if South Africa stops attacking, see, all these problems are interrelated. If South Africa stops attacking Angola, there will be no need for Cubans to stay on in Angola. But South Africa is using that as a pretext for keeping the Cubans there, so that when the Cubans are there, this country here can continue to say, the Cubans are in Angola, therefore Angola is a communist country. Can you follow the illogic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's try it again more slowly.
No, I get it. I agree. Don't let me disrupt you.
No, it's not a disruption, it's an exchange, you know. If we disagree, let us try to see where we disagree and come to an agreement.
I think this is a stupid question that I'm going
to
ask.
No, no question is ever stupid.
Okay. I mean, I just want to know what you said because I don't have any idea. What does South Africa keep attacking all these countries? It always seems to me that's stupid to do that. And it drains the resources. Why does South Africa, what does that government think is in their interest in attacking Angola? Is it just fear of Angola, or is it, why do they do that? I mean, why do they say they do that? I don't
know. There are several reasons.
Yeah.
One is that Angola has been providing training and sanctuary for freedom fighters who are fighting to free Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And Namibia, as I've said, is now being controlled by South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So South Africa has been fighting the SWAPO, which is Southwest Africa People's Organization, the freedom fighters, has been fighting them. But she's been fighting a losing battle. You see, South Africa has this problem that they are fighting people that look like the majority of the Namibians. So that if I am a SWAPO freedom fighter, I can go and attack and then hide my weapon and just go to market, go to a job, or just do anything. They don't know who. Where these freedom fighters are.
Yeah.
So in desperation, South Africa goes to attack Angola, hoping that by so doing, they can stop Angola's support for the freedom fighters. But like I've said, the freedom fighters are not in Angola. They are in Namibia. So it is like an act of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they feel that by attacking Angola or all these other neighboring countries, they can intimidate them and make them feel like it is not in their interest to support the liberation movement. Thirdly, by attacking them again, if you attack economic targets, then it means that the government is struggling to continue to rebuild. It's like you have, a factory here making, tractors. If that factory is bombed, it means you have to start from scratch and build it again. That's pouring more money. And then when it's bombed, you come back and you rebuild the plant again. That is, you know, money down the drain. At the same time, that is supposed to be good propaganda for South Africa. Because if those countries don't produce the tractors, it means that they have to depend on outsiders. South Africa can point and say, see, Africans are incompetent. They cannot even build a simple thing like a tractor. So while it is not productive in terms of what they want to do. It is, shall I say, good propaganda. And unfortunately, your journalists usually pick up on those things, and they keep pick up on this quote-unquote incompetence of the Africans. And they make it appear like the race of South Africa that makes into these neighboring African countries is an indication of the invincibility of South Africa, which is not the case at all. That was one of the reasons for including Swaziland and Lesotho in this economic community, because you look at those two countries, like you say, they are completely surrounded by South Africa. And so all their trade is with, first and foremost, with South Africa. But you see, if they're included in the this economic community of Southern African states, then they won't need South Africa, except in terms of transportation. So they have been trying to do that. They've been trying to do as much as they can for those two countries.
It would be extremely difficult because of their geographical location.
Okay, the only difficulty would be in only in terms of transportation. But if they can get most of their products and most of their trade with independent Africa, that means that that will reduce their dependence on South Africa. What only concern, like you say, is the fact that being completely surrounded, all that trade will still have to pass through South African territory. But they've been making some very strong statements to the effect that they would also like to get away from South Africa's grasp.
What about in terms of oil? Are the only oil fields that those countries have their own are the ones off of the west coast, right?
Yeah.
The ones by Cabinda.
Mm-hmm.
There are no others.
Okay, they are the ones in Angola can supply virtually all of Southern Africa. Mm-hmm. They have the capacity. Also, they've discovered oil in Congo, which is this country right next door to Zaire. There is potential also for oil in Zaire that could also be diverted to Southern Africa. Zambia and Zimbabwe have also been turning towards sugar, gasohol actually, and they have a very large. They grow a lot of sugar in Zimbabwe, and the last year alone they produced almost $14 million worth of gasohol, which for a country that small is quite a significant present. It appears that within the next 5 to 10 years, that region just might be close to self-sufficient in terms of energy.
It kind of looks like you always support the winning side. I mean, if the Cubans, I mean, they won in Angola, their group.
Mm-hmm.
If the other side had won, you know, with American help and so forth, they would have been the hero today. Is that right?
That is, if they had won, the other side had won, they would have been the heroes today.
Mm-hmm. Well, our help for unhelping them, then we would have been considered heroes by the government that would have been in effect.
That is correct, yes. But
so, I mean, it's a matter of picking the winning side, we do support.
But also, it's not just a matter of picking the winning side, it's also the realization of what that means. When you pick a losing side, are you willing to concede that your side is lost and that it's about time that you switched and began not necessarily to support the other side, but to help those people get together? See, that's my major concern, that by continuing to arm UNITA and FNLA, what this government is doing is going to prolong the war. Because if they arm them again, they'll come back in there with arms, and that war will flare up all over again. Whereas, if they were to stop supporting UNITA, the current administration in Angola has been making moves towards attracting UNITA to come back and work with that government for the betterment of Angola. But you see, as long as UNITA feels that they can get support from this country, why should they negotiate with the government? In other words, we are trying to de-emphasize the whole military aspect. We're trying to say that the fighting should be over and done with. We have won the country from the Portuguese. Time for us to get together, whatever our different ideals, however the differences we might have among us. Let us now all get together like they did in Zimbabwe and work for the good of the whole country. But when you have people from outside coming to supply weapons to different groups, there can be no peace in a country like that. And the government of Angola will just have to go on fighting until they can completely, shall I say, stop this sort of thing.
For the communist government are supplying weapons, isn't that true? You just said that East Germany, Czechoslovakia, and Russia.
I said East Germany, China, and Russia supplied the weapons when we were fighting the war in Zimbabwe. When that war was ended, the supply of arms was also cut off because we did not need them anymore. They are not supplying any more weapons except for the defense of Angola. When Angola needs certain weapons, they go shopping to whoever will sell them.
The Europeans in the recent times, like in the last year or so, are getting real interested in not wanting to have a war, like a nuclear war, fought between the United States or the Western world or the Eastern world on their territory, similar to a kind of fight if you speak up for Southern Africa, not wanting to have a superpower fight a battle on the back of Southern Africa. And what support does Southern Africa get from Western Europe or any part of that Europe in the development of your economic bloc and, you know, in the solution of some of the problems that you're having?
We're getting a lot of support, but mostly from the Nordic countries like Sweden, Norway, Scandinavia. They are in complete agreement, or rather, shall I say, in almost in total agreement with our plans. The other countries like France, West Germany, and Britain tend to go along with what the United States does. So their position is not always clear.